Some of you remember a man named Peter Hahn. He died a few years ago. He was a real character. If you knew him, you would never forget him. He had a unique personality, and he was always big into food. Food was such an important part of his life. He used to organize elaborate Super Bowl Sunday parties for the homeless people. He'd bring me to his grungy apartment and make me breakfast and serve me coffee out of a thing that hadn't been washed in a couple years, you know. Every April Fool's Day, he insisted that he take me to a restaurant that none of us had ever seen. And yeah, and one was like the Busy Bee over here. Ever been to that? Easter Sunday, he said, "Can I ride with you to Elmira?" Because we used to have a mass down there. So he gets in the car. He said, "Well, this is Easter Sunday." He said, I gave up potatoes for Lent." I said, "Oh, that's interesting." He said, "So yeah, now that it's Easter," he said, "if we could stop at, I want to get some au gratin potatoes at this restaurant. I want to get some French fries at this restaurant. I want to get some hash browns at this restaurant. I want to get some sweet potato." So we did. We had to stop at all these restaurants. About 3 months later, I smelled something in the car. I pulled down the glove compartment, au gratin potatoes. When he was married, he told his wife, he said, "Hey, every Saturday night, let's do something fun. Let's have a meal with a unique theme. And it'll be based on a different country. We'll go down the alphabet." So the first Saturday night, it was a country beginning with the letter A, Austria. So he decorated the house with pictures of the Austrian Alps. He played music from Johann Strauss. He cooked Wiener Schnitzel and Viennese sausage. They had German beer and caramelized pancakes for dessert. The second Saturday night, it was a country with the letter B, Bahamas. So he buys all these fake palm trees and puts them around the table, plays calypso music, serves white rum and triple sec, cooks shellfish, pigeon peas, and rice. The third Saturday night, letter C, China. He put red lanterns all around the dining room, put a statue of Buddha right in the middle of the table, played Mandarin music, had cashew chicken, plum wine, tea, and fortune cookies. It took him hours to do this, to prepare all this every single Saturday night. And that's because eating was important for him. Eating together with friends was important. Now, the most important meal that you and I have all week is right here. That's the most important meal that we ever have. And think of all the preparation that goes into this. We need sacristans, musicians, singers, lectors, decorators, Eucharistic ministers, celebrants, preachers, ushers, sound engineers, video technicians, camera operators, greeters, set up and take down people. We put a lot of effort into this meal because it's so important, the Lord's Supper. Today's the feast of the body and blood of Christ, or Corpus Christi. And we see that Jesus put a lot of effort into organizing the first Last Supper. Like Peter Hahn, Jesus saw food as a gathering spot for people. And he told his disciples in preparation, he said, "Go into Jerusalem and look for somebody that I've arranged to meet you. He'll be carrying a water jar on his head." He said, now you'll see a lot of women carrying water jars, but this is the only guy that will have a water jar. So follow him, and he'll bring you to a house. When you get to that house, you ask the owner, "Where is a guest room upstairs big enough for all of us to celebrate the Eucharist?" And when he shows it to you, make sure it's furnished, get the plates, the goblets, the napkins, get everything ready, and spend the day preparing the Passover. And certainly the women must have been the ones to prepare the food. So why all this preparation? Because Jesus knew that this would be the last meal they would have together. It was important. His final meal with his inner circle of men and women. Did you ever have a dinner or breakfast with somebody that you knew that was going to be your last time with them? I had my whole family over to my house one time, and we took a picture, everybody, all the siblings and their wives and husband, and my brother Brady died the next month, and so we called the picture the Last Supper. Maybe you had that experience. Well, Jesus knew this is the last time, so it was a very intimate meal, put a lot of preparation to it. He wanted them to know how much he loved them. It was a friendship meal that he wanted them never to forget. So he carefully planned it out. At the end of the Passover meal, Jesus altered the Passover rite, the ritual a bit, and he took bread and broke it, and he said, "Take this and eat. This is my body." He gave them some wine. He says, "Take and drink. This is my blood." It was an act of self-giving that would take place the next day on the cross. And he said, "Whenever you do this, whenever you pass the bread and the wine, remember how much I love you." And we've been doing that for 2,000 years in churches, in homes, in military bases, in jails, in parks, on cruise ships. We've taken the bread and the wine and remember how much the Lord loves us and how he's still with us. Now, since the pandemic began, we haven't been using the communion cup. Those of you who are at home, you probably do have the cup, but out of health safety reasons, we haven't reintroduced the cup yet, but I hope we can pretty soon. The cup is mentioned 21 times in the Bible. Sometimes it refers to the cup of joy, other times it refers to the cup of sorrow. So the cup of joy, Psalm 23, "My cup overflows, a happy time." Today, Lou read Psalm 16. "How shall I thank the Lord for all God has done for me? I'll take the chalice of salvation, the cup of salvation, and call upon the name of the Lord." And sometimes it's a cup of suffering, where Jesus says, "Take this cup away from me. I don't want to drink its poison." Or he asked James and John, "Can you drink the cup that I'm going to drink? Can you handle the suffering that I can handle?" Now, in today's reading from Mark's gospel, he refers to the cup twice. Once it's the cup of suffering, and the other time it's the cup of joy. He says, "Take this and drink. This is my blood." That's the cup of suffering. He said, "I won't drink this again until I drink it anew in the reign of God." That's the cup of joy. In other words, after all this messy death and torture and suffering is over, I'll raise the cup. We'll all raise the cup together. After this is all over, we'll raise the cup and we'll toast God's new dream for the new world that is taking place. So that he had this vision for a dream of justice and kindness and goodness and peace for the world. He says, we'll all drink together to toast God for this new world that's coming. Now, we can all relate to the cup of suffering. Sometimes we have an empty cup. Don't you just feel like empty? Like just an empty. And we're waiting. We're waiting to get married. Waiting to find somebody. Waiting to have a baby. Waiting to find a job. Waiting to buy a house. It's kind of hard to buy a house these days. We're waiting for a biopsy result. Waiting for our daughter to call. For our son to come home from prison. Waiting for racial injustice to end. Waiting for gun violence to cease. Sometimes our cup is being poured out. Do you ever feel like you're just being poured out? Parents who are raising special needs kids. People caring for a sick loved one. Parents working three jobs just to put food on the table. They're being poured out. We can also relate to the cup of joy. We just got engaged. We're getting married. Just found out we're pregnant. We're going to have a baby. I just got a new job. Lockdown is over. I can go on vacation. I can come to church. And at the same mass, you know, as a priest, you can see everybody, right? And so people come down the aisle, and you know this person just lost their mother. The next person just found out they're pregnant. It's all a mixture. And joy and suffering rub shoulders in life in general. Don't you think that's true for ourselves and for everybody here? We're all in a different place, but we drink from the same cup. Jesus offers us the cup and says, "I'm with you no matter what, in the good times and bad times." Now notice who the recipients of communion are at the Last Supper. These are not morally perfect people at all. They would betray him, deny him, disappoint him, and desert him. So communion is not a reward for good behavior. It's not a reward for being married one time. It's not a gift for those who do everything right. Nor is communion a reward for correct doctrine. Have you noticed how many U.S. bishops are trying to deny President Biden communion? Have you seen that? They don't think he should receive communion because he doesn't fully support church doctrine on human sexuality. He's not really Catholic, they say. He shouldn't receive communion. But I like how Pope Francis got into it. And he said, he told them to back off. He said, communion is an opportunity for healing. It's not an occasion for judgment. Amen. Religion, unfortunately, has always been concerned with who's in and who's out. Who do we allow in? Who do we throw out? Who's worthy? Who's not worthy? But communion is not about worthiness. Instead, it's forgiveness for the weak, medicine for the sick, food for the hungry, healing for the brokenhearted, guidance for the lost, comfort for the afflicted, a life preserver for the drowning. It's Jesus' personal gift to let us know that we're not orphans. He didn't leave us all alone. He's with us, the continuing presence that we feel every time we come to the Eucharist. He offers us food to strengthen us for the difficult journey ahead. And his gift animates us to be just like him, to be loving of friends and enemies. In the 1940s, a black man was dating a black woman in Chicago. He was Baptist, she was Episcopalian. One day she said to her boyfriend, come to my church this Sunday. And he said, hey, I'm Baptist. I'm used to lots of hooping and hollering, and I think the Episcopalian church is going to be too tame for me. And she said, well, come anyway. So he went, and it was about 80% white and about 20% black. When the pastor invited everybody to communion, the man held back. It was the 1940s. Jim Crow, segregation were in full swing. But he watched his girlfriend go up and take the body of Christ. Then he noticed there was only one cup, a common cup for everybody. And he said to himself, I wonder if the pastor will let her receive from that cup, drink from that cup. And he held his breath. And the pastor gave her the cup. Then he wondered if anybody else would drink from that cup after she did. The next person did. The next person did. The next person did. Everybody drank from that cup. He said to himself, any church where blacks and whites drink out of the same cup must know something about the gospel that I want to be part of. And he joined the Episcopal Church. He became an Episcopal priest. He married his girlfriend, and they became the father of Michael Curry. Michael Curry is now the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church in the United States of America. And he preached at Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's wedding. You might remember that. So that was a turning point in that family. So we always say here, this table is not a Catholic table. It's not a Protestant table. It's not a Jewish table. It's not a white table. It's not a black table. It's not an Asian American table. It's the Lord's table, and everybody is welcome. Nobody who comes to me will I ever reject.